Today is March 5th, 2014, and this is episode number 245 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, delinquent Doolittle. If you would like to comment on or to get the full story, I don't know. We're doing some kind of podcasty thing. You can go over to MacObserver.com/ACM. And you can write us at acm@macobserver.com. That's what we do when we're actually prepared.
And that's all for this week. Thanks for listening.
Every time we do this, we have to actually do the show.
I'm just glad that we get through the introduction. Why push our luck?
you're a little ahead of yourself. That's ridiculous. Boy, howdy, delinquent Doolittle.
How about that?
It about sums it up.
Yeah, but you're our delinquent.
Yes. So it's been a busy week in the Apple world.
That's what I hear.
It's been a busy week. All of the internets covered my little take on a little thing from Apple shareholder meeting.
Which totally rocked. Your little take on the Apple shareholder meeting was fantastic.
By the way, if you're one of the two sites who didn't credit me, shame, shame, shame on you, your authors, and your editors.
And you too, you know.
Yes. Yes. Everyone else did, though, and that's good. But shareholder meeting was last Friday. It was mostly, there were a couple of interesting pieces of news, but, you know, it wasn't a hubbub.
No, it didn't have the makings of a Hollywood script.
No, it didn't. We got, let's see, one piece of news was that Tim Cook, and funny enough, of the stuff that I wrote about the shareholder meeting, the first story I did was the one that I thought was the big news, and it's the one that I thought would, like, you know, catch fire, and I rushed home from the meeting.
And that was the one about all the jobs.
Yeah. And the ecosystem. And I rushed home from the meeting to make sure that we could beat anybody else up. Beat everyone else to publishing anything about it. And it really didn't gain a lot of traction. And no one else seemed to care. I mean, like no one else was covering it either.
It's like, it's like the reaction was, more jobs, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, so Tim Cook said, he told shareholders... this was relating to jobs in the U.S. And he said that, you know, in this project in Arizona where we're making the Sapphire, you know, I'm not going to give you any more details on that, but it's going to create thousands of jobs, referring to the people that are going to be making stuff in Arizona. And then he said, and it's going to create an ecosystem that'll create tens of thousands of jobs, referring to theoretically developers.
You know what would have made that the hugest story ever?
Do tell.
Is if Tim had said, no, you don't understand. We're not talking about work for people. We're talking about jobs. We have a cloning facility we have built in Arizona. This is like Boys from Brazil, but in a good way. We're making more jobs. And then there's all these little Steve Jobs running around to open up all these companies. That would have been really big news.
I'm shaking my head at you, man. In case you're wondering what it is I'm doing through the glass.
I just thought you're trying to be hip and get your hair out of your eyes.
So what this tells us is that the Sapphire is not for an existing product. It's for a new product, and it's going to be a new category. Of course, we've been expecting this to have something to do with Apple's wearables. So, you know, that, but this is the first time that Apple has said something along those lines.
Yeah, which is very interesting because Apple historically has not been a company that tips their hand really at all. And here they're offering up these very tantalizing little nuggets that don't, in and of themselves, tell us much about what they're planning on doing, but they tell us something is happening.
Yeah, and you know, the bit that he says is going to create an ecosystem, that means this is a new product, right? This is not a new iPhone. It's not a new iPad. It's not a new Mac. It's a new product category, because that's what it takes for a new ecosystem. And so, you know, whatever it is isn't just going to run iOS apps, for instance. You know, people are going to be creating apps for this product category. And so, I thought that was the big news out of the piece, out of the shareholder meeting. But it's interesting.
I find it absolutely fascinating, and I'm surprised that it didn't explode like your other piece did, which totally deserved to explode.
Well, that was so. I didn't expect that to gain much traction because it spills into the land of politics, and you know, usually when we cover political stuff, you know, it's by definition it's going to be alienating someone.
True, but we didn't cover politics here.
That's true.
What we covered was we covered Tim Cook. We covered emotion. We covered passion.
It's true. And what we're talking about, of course, is Tim Cook reacting angrily to the National Center for Public Policy Research, a right-wing think tank with some pretty laughable goals and ideals, at least in my opinion. And they were pushing a shareholder proposal that would force Apple to disclose the cost and information associated with its membership in certain trade groups, which to me is just fascinating that they use the word certain.
It is, but then again, they had a very focused agenda.
Yeah, their agenda. I mean, in theory, ostensibly, their shareholder proposal was about transparency. Transparency is a good thing. The more Apple tells its shareholders about what it's doing, not including product information, the better. The more any corporation discloses what it's doing, and in this case, its membership and trade groups, the better it is. I think not only for shareholders, but even for society itself. You know, where these corporations exist, but wrapped around all of their information about what little information about transparency there was in their proposal was actually a bunch of climate change denial stuff, and that's the agenda they were actually trying to push, was that Apple shouldn't, that participating in sustainable energy is bad for shareholders, and you know, is a bad goal, and it's based on non-existent science and all this other stuff. And it turns out that Apple shareholders don't agree. They rejected that proposal. I think it got 2.96 or 2.95% of the vote in favor of it.
Wow.
So Apple shareholders don't agree, which is nice, but
and not surprising,
right? But that's not where Tim was reacting angrily. The management had urged shareholders to vote against that stuff, against that proposal, but they urged everyone to vote against all of the shareholder proposals, including some that are on the left that are a lot more in sync with Apple's public stance on such issues as worker rights and stuff like that. So that wasn't where the sparks came. The sparks came during the question and answer session when the same representative, I think his last name was Danhoff, asked Tim Cook to, first of all, to admit that, because Tim said that participating, if Tim said that we want to leave the Earth, we want to leave the places we go better than how we found them. That's a paraphrase, but it's pretty close. And he also said that sustainability programs are good for the bottom line. Mm-hmm. And so the NCPPR representative challenged Mr. Cook on that, saying that isn't it true that it's only good for the bottom line because of government subsidies? as if that is somehow a bad thing, but, you know, tomato, tomato. And then asked Tim to commit to only basing his decisions on in terms of the return on investment.
Yeah, and I find that fascinating that they feel that all business decisions should come down to what is the ROI.
Yeah, the ROI on a particular individual thing. You know, how much more money is the company going to make from any given decision? Of course, the
it's very Ferengi.
It is very Ferengi. It is very Ferengi. And John F. Braun tweeted that, I think. It's like, who?
Oh, did he?
He either commented on it in the article. I think now maybe it was an article comment. He said, "Who invited the Ferengi?"
That's awesome.
It was very nice, John. And it's a short-sighted approach that leads to things like dumping toxins in rivers, and you know, just slicing the tops off mountains in order to mine them. And, you know, it leads to very, very short-sighted things that might actually have a very good ROI, at least in the short term, but don't have a good ROI in the long term, and certainly not for the societies and the people that that live in communities and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's just, it's just, this group is just weird.
Well, that's how Ferengi are. It's just a different culture, different planet, different genetic code, different species.
And Tim Cook, when the guy asked him to commit to this, and apparently they got GE to do just that. According to the NCPPR, GE modified its corporate bylaws exactly along these lines, which really makes me...
That's crazy.
Makes me...
I mean, really, that's crazy. Why would they do that?
I cannot imagine. I haven't verified that.
Well, okay, so assuming GE really did that, that I think really hobbles the company and the board of directors and the top level management's ability to really effectively react to the marketplace and to other changes.
It's true, and you know, Tim Cook said, you know, we're not going to do that. When we look at making our devices, again, this is a paraphrase. I don't have the quote in front of me, but when we look at modifying or making our devices accessible by the blind, and then I think he said those with autism, we don't think about the bloody ROI. And he actually used the word bloody there, which is in England at least, it's considered a cuss word. And I'm assuming you picked that up from Johnny Ive, but who knows? And
he might be a Doctor Who fan, or
could be.
Yeah.
And he went on at length about how Apple doesn't always do things from the standpoint of just the ROI, because the ROI is not the only thing that matters. And he said some things that we do are going to be we do them because they're just and right. And he was angry. I've never seen Tim Cook angry in public. This was the first time. He was extremely angry. His body English was... He became focused...
His body language.
Thank you, body language. I've been doing that all my life. His body language became extremely focused. You know, Tim Cook's a rocker. When he's sitting and he's talking, he tends to rock back and forth. And his rocking changed. He started leaning towards the guy. His face became very narrowed, very focused. He started speaking in... much faster. He used terms like "I," you know, instead of the corporate "we." He was angry. He was angry at the guy, and he said he summed it up with, "If you want me to base my decision solely on ROI, you should stop investing in this company."
To that I say, go Tim.
Yeah, go Tim. Go Tim. And it was pretty much, to me, it was a categorical rejection of everything that the NCPPR stands for. But in particular, it was a direct and specific rejection of this notion that ROI is the only thing that matters.
You know, if people feel like Tim Cook isn't leading Apple by this point, then they need to really actually pay attention to what's going on. Tim has made it very clear that he is in charge, and his response to that organization last Friday, if there was any doubt in anyone's mind, it should be gone after that.
It should be. That said, there were about 20 journalists. So, you know, the journalists were all taken to... I am an Apple shareholder. I own a ridiculously small holding in Apple, for full disclosure's sake. But despite that, I get taken with the other journalists to an overflow room. There were only about 20 of us this year, and maybe not even quite 20. And I was the only one that wrote about this. You know, everyone else that wrote about it was writing about it based on my piece. And I think it's because Tim's body language...
You're good at reading people from a physical aspect.
I am. I read people really, really well. And I'm not sure how many people they're actually... actually noticed it, and maybe that's why no one else was jumping on that story.
Or they may not have really got the significance of what was happening until you pointed it out.
Yeah.
And when they read your piece, and they're like, "Oh, holy crap! Yeah, that is what I saw."
And what's interesting? One of the interesting things about this to me is, you know, well, Tim Cook has gotten a lot of criticism from Apple haters in particular, about being too, you know, too unemotional, too flat, too controlled, you know, because they're comparing him to Steve Jobs, the late Steve Jobs, I might add, who was very, you know, very dynamic, outgoing, extroverted personality. You know, when he gets angry, for instance, he gets very bombastic, and, you know, he uses the S word and calls people names and tells them how
saliva
stupid, the other S word.
Oh, right.
But also a body. Anyway, and I remember reading a piece. I want to say it was Apple Insider that did it, but I honestly can't remember. There was a piece that talked to people, former and current Apple employees, who said that Tim Cook gets angry. It's just a different kind of anger. And I kind of think of it as like a very motherly anger, the anger of, I am angry because you have disappointed me, you know. And that's a cold anger. It's an anger of narrowed eyes, and the repercussions from this are going to be severe.
The anger of disappointment that you described, that for many people is far worse to have to deal with than the explosive anger.
Right.
Because with explosive anger, you know that they're whoever it is are going to just fly off the handle and then it'll be over. But with that cold anger of disappointment, now that gets internalized.
Yes.
And now you feel guilty.
Yes.
And it just eats at you.
Exactly. Exactly. And so we've heard this report, but this is the first time we've actually seen it. And to me, Apple haters, Tim Cook doubters, should pay attention. We now have the proof of that particular pudding. Tim does get angry, and when he does, he is incredibly forceful. I was watching him on the screen. I wasn't seeing him in person. I was watching him with the camera focused on him, which is actually easier when it comes to reading body language. It's actually easier to do that with the camera. But it was intimidating, and I was on the other end of the screen, and it was intimidating, and it was forceful, and it was really, really interesting to see.
So even with a wall between you and Tim, you were still intimidated.
Exactly, I was, and I wasn't even the object of his wrath.
He has radiative wrath.
covered the piece. You covered the reaction. Or wait, did you cover the reaction letter from them? No, I don't actually think we covered it. We'll skip over that. But they did release a letter, this group, the NCPPR. They're like, you know, oh my God, Tim's telling us to take our money elsewhere. You know, what's wrong with this company? Well, you know what, folks? Turns out there's not a lot wrong with Apple. Because that's why they're worth so much and why they make so much money.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. And yeah, there you go. If Apple was mismanaging themselves, they would not be one of the most valuable companies on the planet.
You know, we should probably mention right there, we should probably mention that Peter Oppenheimer today announced his retirement.
See, this is how I know that we actually have a time vortex between the glass here. Mm-hmm. Because for me, it was yesterday.
Was that yesterday? I haven't gotten much sleep this week, man.
I feel your pain.
I'm sure you do. So yesterday... it was today or yesterday. I can't even do my time machine right. Oh my goodness.
That's all right. Don't worry. You tomorrow when we podcast, yeah. You'll be fine.
All right. So tell us about it, please. Yesterday.
So yesterday, Apple released a press release saying that Peter Oppenheimer, their CFO, is retiring, and so he'll be leaving the company by around the end of September, and he's going to start, or they're going to start the official transition to their new CFO.
Are you looking for his name?
No, I in my databanks in my head, Lucha Maedra, is that right?
Maitri Marti Ang D-fortified 6 hyperblade ratios of the juxtaposition rates. Or also Luca Maestri.
Luca Maestri. Okay. I was close. All right.
Boy, that was anyhow, smooth.
So no one's going to notice that, especially when we record this show tomorrow.
Exactly.
All right, so anyhow, the transition to Lucha as the new CFO will start in June. In reality, this transition started in March of 2013 when he officially came on as the corporate controller for the company.
Oh, you think he was hired to replace Peter?
Absolutely.
I see.
Especially with Tim Cook's comments about when they met him, they knew he would be Peter's replacement.
Oh, I see.
So when they hired him and made him corporate controller, they knew that when Peter left, they had the new corporate controller.
I see.
He has 25 years experience doing this. He left Xerox, I believe.
Yeah, Xerox. He was the CFO of Xerox.
He worked for GM doing this, and he has worked for Siemens, I believe.
Okay.
And
by the way, LOL.
We are 12. Okay, people, just so you know, we're 12. Yeah. Anyhow, so he has a lot of experience, and he had the right mix so that when Tim Cook met him, he's like, all right, this is Peter's replacement.
Right. And so far the markets are, Apple's pretty much been keeping on keeping on. So the markets are taking this in stride. You know, Peter took over from Fred Anderson, who left shortly after an option backdating scandal.
Yes. So this is, geez, 10 years ago now.
Yeah, he's been CFO for quite a while. Damon, our long-term curmudgeon Damon, one of our readers, said that, what he said that, this was in my piece about Peter Oppenheimer being selected for Goldman Sachs' board, which was the day before that on Monday,
mm-hmm.
alternately on Friday, but you know, whatever. Goldman's
wibbly wobbly timey.
Exactly. Goldman Sachs picks the guy who, for over a decade, so severely underguided Apple performance, it became a game to speculate by how much Apple overperformed. When Apple only slightly outperformed guidance, it was seen as a massive failure. Makes a very, very good point. So, you know, Peter has done, like, a really, really good job, but he does have this legacy of the underguidance that eventually became an albatross around Apple's neck.
Yes, and they eventually fixed that.
They did. They did fix that. You know, it's funny. I remember when Peter announced that Apple, from now on, we're going to be giving guidance that we actually think we can hit. And he just sounded like so pissed off about it. I wasn't watching him because that was over the conference call. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't have any body language to go with that read, but his voice seemed like he was angry about it.
It took away something that I'm speculating he enjoyed, which is being able to use the Scotty principle, which is you underpromise, so you overdeliver.
Yeah, the problem with that, though, is that that works really, really well when your life is invented by writers in a writer room around a table who get to vet everything. When it's real life, it turns out that people eventually notice.
And when they did, or at least when Peter realized they noticed, then they changed
it. Well, no, it was years later.
Maybe he didn't realize till then. He hadn't gotten an updated script.
Yeah, maybe.
Yes, they should have changed it years earlier because it did become a problem.
It did. It really did become a problem. And, you know, Apple fans would just be, like, mystified. It's like, well, you know, they beat last year. Why is this somehow a miss? It's like, well, it's a miss because Peter has been sandbagging for you know, a decade. And you sandbag long enough, people notice.
Apparently they do.
I don't think Peter's going to invite me to his going away party.
That's so weird. I've already got my invitation.
Oh, man, you're cool.
Well, you know.
So what's cooler than me? So anyway, yeah, that's going on and was not announced at the shareholder meeting. Chuck Jones over at Fortune had said that it might be announced over at the shareholders meeting. And
yeah, Chuck had everything right, yep. Except when the announcement would happen. He was off by just a few days. Oh, I have heard some people speculating that there's some big mystery about when Peter is leaving. Yeah, meaning why is it so far out? And,
well, that's a good thing. And,
yeah, it's a good thing because first it shows he's not being pushed out. This is a decision he made.
Right, and nor is he fleeing.
Correct, he is not fleeing. And the date that he's leaving, the end of September, totally makes sense. And Peter Cohen over at iMore, he pointed this out, and it's something that everyone should have known, but it took Peter to point it out. Of course, it's the end of September. That's the end of the fiscal year.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually, yeah, there's, it's people, you know, some people just don't know.
Well, that's why there's people like us and Peter Cohen mm-hmm. out there to help out.
Yep, it's true, it's true. It's true, it's true. So how about we look at the corporate, oopsie, sorry about that.
Okay, what day did we write about that, Brian?
No idea, man. No idea. That might have been tomorrow.
Based on your time scale or schedule, yes, we will write about this tomorrow. Yeah. All right, so the deal is, all right, you remember when Apple totally got their panties in a bunch because Samsung had leaked confidential licensing agreements that Apple had with Nokia.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, that just exploded. It was a huge headache, and the court started looking into it. And for people that don't know, this was all related to the Apple versus Samsung patent fight.
Right. Samsung's outside counsel,
Quinn Emanuel.
Was it Quinn?
Oh yeah,
leaked the terms of a confidential licensing agreement between Apple and Nokia to their client Samsung. And you know, the way this sort of thing works, as part of the case, they had legitimate need for this data, this information.
Yes, it was for expert witnesses.
Yep. And the way the courts have evolved to handle this is because Apple and Nokia both viewed it as a proprietary. Actually, what's the term for like when it's super important?
Oh, I always go with confidential, but
But there's a term for like super important. Super important to the company, you know, like
trade secret sort of things.
Thank you. That it was a trade secret. And because it was a trade secret, the courts agreed. The outside attorneys, Quinn Emanuel, were given access to it. And the way this goes is they don't let their clients know. And they did let their clients know. They let Samsung know. They basically leaked it to Samsung because that's how Samsung rolls. And Samsung, you know, just was very blasé and blithe about it. It's like, information leaks. Too bad.
Right. They shared it with, 50 of their own employees.
Yep.
And one of their senior executives insinuated that the information was used to gain the upper hand in licensing negotiations of their own.
Which is precisely why Nokia. It was supposed to stay secret.
Right. Now, ultimately, Apple and Nokia were not able to prove satisfactorily to the court that Samsung actually had been using the information inappropriately. So Samsung was off the hook. Quinn Emanuel was hit with some sanctions for handing out the documents when they should not have.
Actually, I don't think they were sanctioned. I think that they were reprimanded.
They were fined.
They were fined? You sure about that?
Or they will be fined.
I thought that the idea was that the shame of having been publicly exposed will pretty much be punishment in and of itself because it will affect their ability to get on the future business.
I'm pretty sure there's money that's going to be involved because that kind of plays in to the delicious twist in all of this that came out today.
Tell us about that.
Those very same documents that Apple and Nokia pretty much had a stroke over being released.
A reasonable stroke.
Apple included in a public filing in October. Yeah. So those very same documents Apple turned around and leaked themselves. And it gets better. Those documents were left in public filings until February, when Samsung told the court, hey, do you see what Apple just did here 4 months ago? And so now there's going to be a hearing on April 8th to sort out what needs to be done about Apple leaking the same documents.
Right.
Now for Samsung, the part that plays back into fines and stuff is that they're saying, look, based on what Apple has done, whatever fines that ultimately are imposed on Quinn Emanuel should not be nearly as high as you're thinking right now, because Apple can't even keep their own documents secret.
It's true. It's absolutely true, and I absolutely agree with this with that philosophy. I mean, this is pretty bad.
It's really bad, and it's bad just to have it happen, but under these circumstances, it's really bad. You would think that Apple and their legal teams would be watching stuff like this so closely to make sure that they wouldn't do this very thing after they freaked out in such a big way about Samsung doing it.
Yes. Well, okay, and there's a difference, though. There is a difference. Apple let its own confidential licensing terms loose in the wild through a court filing by mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, this is also Nokia's licensing agreement. So Apple definitely spilled someone else's beans while they were knocking over their own can of beans.
Yes.
The difference is that with Samsung, it was more Samsung cheating. This was Samsung getting access to someone else's beans entirely. This is Samsung knocking over someone else's can, not knocking over their own can of beans. It was Samsung going and sticking its hand in someone else's jar of beans and helping themselves to it. And so there is a difference here.
Yeah, there is a difference. And when you look at what Apple did, they had one instance in this case of being really stupid. And in the case of Samsung, you have multiple instances of their outside legal counsel handing over documents that they knew they shouldn't have. And then they pass them around to their own people.
Yeah.
So what should have happened is the very first time that Quinn Emanuel gave Samsung these documents, Samsung should have immediately said, whoa, no, we're not supposed to have these. And then alerted the court that they had been inadvertently given the documents, but they did not do anything with them and do not have them anymore.
Right. And that's not what they do.
No. Instead, what they did was they took the documents, they reviewed them, they may very well have used them in inappropriate ways, although we don't know that for certain because that was not proved. And we have multiple instances where those documents were handed over. And at no point did they make any attempt to alert the court and fix the problem. It wasn't until Apple and Nokia flipped out because they discovered. And
So
that's a problem.
It is a problem. Just more nonsense.
Yes. And for Apple, regardless of how long the documents were out from their end and who may or may not have seen them, this is just a really bad black eye. This is going to be a headache for them in their patent fight with Samsung. That they'll be able to get past it, but they have quite a bit of time now where they're going to have to work to recover from this one.
Right. Right. Interesting, huh?
Yeah. It's like almost like a little soap opera.
A little soap opera. Not even so little.
No, actually, this is a giant worldwide soap opera.
You know what I miss?
What do you miss?
As the Apple world turns.
Oh, I had forgotten all about that.
It's a good site.
Yeah.
It's a good site. I think there were a couple that ran that site. They did a good job. It was funny. It was entertaining.
That was a lot of fun. That's been gone for several years. Yeah. I miss that.
Do you remember Secret Mac Guy?
Secret Mac Guy. Wow.
I tried to track him down and get him to write for us after as the Apple world turns folded.
But you weren't able to find him.
Was not able to find him. Never got a response. Well, if I did find him, he didn't respond.
Which in this case is pretty much the same as not finding him.
Yeah. Really, really, yeah. I loved his. This was back in the day when Apple was beleaguered and about to, theoretically about to go under.
When everyone was rumored to be buying them, including Dunkin' Donuts.
Exactly.
Because really, who better to own a computer company than a donut maker?
It's true. So yeah, anyway, that was good. I miss those. I hope that they have all found much success elsewhere because they were a talented bunch of folks.
I hope so too. I also miss cars. Crazy Apple rumors.
Oh yeah. I'd forgotten about cars.
Yeah, that's been gone for a few years too.
Yeah.
That was always so much fun.
That was definitely a lot of fun. Let's see here. How about we talk about some of these leaks and rumors and speculation and insider information about Apple hiring folks around the world?
Wait. Are you saying that there are reports that Apple is on a hiring spree?
Yes, I am.
Well, I can't imagine why Apple would need to be hiring people all around the world. It's not like they're working on any new exciting projects.
Well, Apple is nominally an American company. Everything is designed in Cupertino, right? Or designed in California.
Mm-hmm.
And while Apple has employees around the world, the vast majority of its engineering team has always been based somewhere in the States, but almost entirely in California. So,
yeah. But if they're hiring engineers and designers in countries all around the world, does that mean at some point we might open up an Apple box and the first thing we see, instead of designed in California, is designed in Bangladesh?
Designed on Earth.
Or designed on Earth.
I don't actually think so. I think that... All right, so we have two sets of rumors. Which one do you want to look at first? We have two sets of rumors that have sparked this conversation.
Let's look at the big hirings.
Okay. So yesterday, was that yesterday?
I'm not sure which temporal plane you're in right now, so let's go with yes.
Okay. So yesterday, the Wall Street Journal reported that Apple was on a quote-unquote hiring binge of engineers in Taiwan and China. And that some of these engineers are being hired to work on making Apple's supply chain even more awesome. So, you know, and I actually think the details there are worth exploring. But the other part of that was that Apple has been recruiting and poaching from HTC and other Taiwan-based tech firms, looking for engineers and sending them messages through recruiting through LinkedIn. And according to one email that was given to the Wall Street Journal, they said that they were looking for folks to work on iPhone product development. So that's different than the supply chain stuff.
Right. So the supply chain thing, for people that aren't picking up on exactly what that means, this isn't so much to me about designing new products. It's about designing systems that improve the efficiency of making products.
Yeah, and in some cases, I think working with component makers more directly. So,
sure.
So at working. So, in other words, helping to better design for Apple components that Apple uses. So that is product development, but
it's not like sitting down with Johnny Ive and saying, "All right, yeah. What are we going to champ for this time?"
Yeah. And of course, it's also, you know, the logistical side of things, like you know, making sure that the factories are, you know, there are all kinds of engineers, and you know, making sure that an assembly line is working properly, making sure that you know, things are being done ergonomically, making sure that the order that things are done is as ergonomic as possible. Now, largely, Apple leaves that sort of stuff up to its experts.
Yeah, but that's been changing lately. I mean, look at Arizona. They've got the whole sapphire glass thing going on there.
Well, yeah, but they're letting their experts.
A more active role in that. But yes, we'll call them their experts.
Well, actually, what they're doing with GT Advanced in Arizona is what they've been doing in Asia for years. And that's, they buy the factory, they buy the equipment, and then they let the experts, third-party companies actually run it.
Right. And someone out there is going to go, Brian, they don't own Foxconn factories. And that's true.
That's right.
But you're right. They do own a lot of the infrastructure, and they let the experts run it for them.
Right. Like the process that's used to make Apple's MacBook Air and MacBook Pro cases. Apple owns that equipment. It's a third-party company that actually does it. But Apple owns the equipment. I want to say that's one of the examples where Apple also owns the factory that the equipment is located in. But they've been doing stuff like that. On the component side, they've been doing stuff like that for a long time. For the manufacturing and assembly side, the stuff that they work with Foxconn or what's the Tronics? Flextronics?
Flextronics? That sounds right.
Anyway, the other... Pegatron. That's what I was thinking of.
Pegatron. Oh, right. Pegatron.
And
now I'm trying to figure out where does Flextronics fit into this, because...
They're a company, too. I can't remember what they do. Boy, if only someone would invent something that would let us check stuff.
Well, that's just crazy talk. There's no power for that we're having to devote...
Yeah,
all of our processing cycles to keeping your time machine working.
Flextronics is also an outsourcer. Outsourcee.
Okay.
Worldwide electronics design, fabrication, assembly, and test. So, anyway, on the assembly side, Apple tends to leave that stuff in their hands because they're really, really good at it. But Apple does have, of course, an army of auditors and managers and checkers and people who are developing recycled water programs for local manufacturing. People who are trying to make sure that these companies are complying with Apple's supplier code of conduct. You know, there's a whole bunch of people that work with Apple's supply chain. And Apple is... I don't think I know quite enough to say that Apple is unique, but I would say that Apple is at the very least a leader in micromanaging its supply chain.
And that's one of the things that Tim Cook has always excelled at.
Yeah.
At Apple. Which is one of the reasons why Apple can get these great component prices. They can lock up an entire market's worth of parts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, That's all Tim Cook magic right there.
Exactly. You know, and while we're here, we should probably give Tim a little tip of the hat. There is no CEO that replaced him, COO that replaced him when he became CEO.
You're right.
You know, and by the way, Miss Arant, the new retail person.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Miss Burberry's, as I call
her. Angela Arendt.
Arendt, thank you. She hasn't taken over retail yet. So Tim is managing... Tim ultimately manages everything, and within everything, retail and operations, too.
It's no wonder he can get a little testy at a shareholder meeting.
So... We have several things that we can glean from this report from the Wall Street Journal. Firstly, I wish I could say I'm doing this on purpose, man, but I'm not. I'm so embarrassed. Firstly,
you keep me entertained.
Apple sees an opportunity for improving its already best-in-class, by a long shot, supply chain.
Mm-hmm. That should have their competition really worried.
Yeah.
If they're having a hard time getting parts now, wait until Apple's even more efficient.
Well, yeah, and, you know, faster to market and being able to meet demand and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Secondly, it shows that Apple sees expansion in the future.
Yes.
Okay. That should also reassure shareholders and worry the competition. Thirdly, the aspect of this where Apple is hiring product engineers or engineers to work on product development for in offices that it's going to be maintaining in China and Taiwan. That's new. And I think that's a good thing. I think it's a terrific thing.
Yeah, this is all stuff that's good for Apple, good for shareholders, ultimately good for consumers, and should have all of these other companies out there that are making products to compete with what Apple sells, should be making them really nervous.
It should. You know, there are lots of good ideas. Apple originates a bunch of them. You know, the people that work for Apple are responsible for a lot of good ideas. But there are other good ideas out there. And while Apple has always been proud of its history as a California company, as an American company, while Apple has been creating manufacturing jobs in the U.S., you know, like for the first time in a long, long time, the idea of having R&D development, research and development offices in any market, in any geographical place where technology is a thing, is fantastic. You know, I'm talking Taiwan, I'm talking China, maybe Russia, I'm not really sure about Russia, Turkey, Israel, Germany, Switzerland, Brazil, maybe, you know, any place where technology is a thing and technology is thriving and new and innovative ideas are being created by people locally within you know, a culture, a particular culture or region. If Apple gets involved in those places and starts having them work on product ideas or product refinement or even just localization, right? It's very possible that all this stuff going on in China and Taiwan is all about better localization for the Chinese market. Because who better to do that than Chinese and Taiwan engineers and designers and creators?
Oh, sure. Well, they have not only the expertise of working in that area, but they also have a lifelong understanding of the culture,
yeah,
which gives them a leg up in negotiations or whatever it is that they need to do to more effectively perform their job.
To wit, look at how bad Samsung's. By the way, I tweeted a link to it. Did you see that was it a 2-hour story? On Samsung,
yes.
Advertising foibles.
Yes, it was 2-hour.
Really good story looking at all their really bad advertising campaigns and advertising decisions, including some of the stuff where non-English speakers or non-native English speakers are writing scripts for English speakers to perform. I mean, it tends to be bad, just as if we were to, you know, if you and I were to try to write a script in Chinese, let's pretend we spoke Chinese. You know, we're just not going to get it right.
No. Well, one problem we'll have is getting the linear time thing to work out.
Well, yeah, it turns out that's a problem that transcends language barriers.
Indeed.
Hold on, let me push up my glasses. So the other part of this rumor was the head of Hublot, which is written like Hublot, but it's Hublot. And he's
no kidding.
Yeah,
I've been mispronouncing that all these years.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Did you actually know that Hublot existed as a watch company? They're not necessarily mainstream.
I look at catalogs that have really cool things in them.
Fair enough. Hublot, watchmaker, dude who's in charge of that company. He's a bigwig within the broader company that actually owns Hublot. He said that Apple's been trying to poach from his watch companies, and that the people that were trying to be poached were said no, and that Apple was maybe even looking at opening up an office in Switzerland. And there was some speculation by the people that reported this that might allow Apple to market the iWatch as Swiss made, but that's ridiculous. That ain't happening.
That part's totally ridiculous. I could see Apple trying to recruit or poach, depending on your perspective, people that are very skilled in watch design. But when you open up the package, they still want it to say designed in Cupertino.
Well, not only that, there's a couple things about that. Swiss made has a lot of cachet to watch geeks and watch enthusiast and watch snobs.
That's probably not the market Apple's going for.
No, because it's a tiny market. No one cares about Swiss made. Who cares about Swiss made? And Swiss made is about mechanical watches. And keep in mind that the best mechanical watch is substantially less accurate than the cheapest quartz watch. You know, owning a mechanical watch today is not about accuracy. It was in the 60s and early 70s, but before. But owning a mechanical watch today is about, you know,
it's about owning the mechanical watch.
Right. Yeah. For some people, it's a status symbol. For some people, it's jewelry. I personally happen to be fascinated by the mechanical device that, you know, the mechanism that makes a watch. And Dave Hamilton is also obsessed with watches, but you know, it's outside of watch keys. No one cares about Swiss made, and Apple's iWatch is not going to be a mechanical. That part was nonsense, and that part did not come from the Hublot executive. That was speculation on the part of the folks that first reported this.
Okay, so what that means is that they just didn't understand why that part wouldn't make sense.
Right.
But now they do, because you've explained it. So, nicely done.
Thank you. And the other thing, though, is that there are other people besides watchmakers that work for high-end watch companies, including metallurgists. There's a lot of really, really high technology. There's a lot of... high technology isn't the way to put it. There's a lot of really advanced metallurgy that goes into watches these days. The high end, you know, we're talking about watches that cost, you know, $2,000 to, you know, $200,000. There's a lot going on. Hublot, for instance, owns a product called Magic Gold. Terrible name, but whatever. That is a combination. It's an alloy that is part gold, but then it also has ceramic in it.
No kidding.
Yeah. And according...
So it gives you the properties of gold, but takes away the softness,
and you get the strength and rigidity of ceramic.
Man, that's really cool.
Oh, I'm sorry, lightness.
Oh man, that's really cool. Yeah.
So according to this same guy back in 2013, he said that Apple tried to license Magic Gold from him, and he refused. He's like, well, yeah, that's not what we do, and of course, you know, in September we get the gold iPhone. So I take his claim at face value. In hindsight, I take his claim at face value.
Sure, and that makes sense.
So there are people that work for watch companies that aren't necessarily the traditional watchmaker, the person with the magnifying glass in their eye, and you know, and tweezers that are actually assembling or designing watches. There are all sorts of very talented people that are doing other things, and the world of metallurgy in particular is a very competitive one. An anecdote that I included in my story was Seiko developed this minute repeater that which is a big deal in the mechanical world, and they put in it a bell that sounds like, and I used to know this, and now I can't remember the details, but it sounds like a bell that's used in what I believe is a Japanese Buddha ceremony, but it could actually be a Shinto ceremony. I don't actually know, but it's a well-known bell sound. And they duplicated that within a watch.
Okay, that's really impressive.
It is really impressive if you care and know about it. And they didn't patent the alloy they developed to make this happen because they didn't want anyone to be able to figure out how they had done it from the patent.
Okay, so the part some people may have missed, they didn't create a digital version.
Yeah.
They found a mechanical way to reproduce the sound.
Yeah, a tiny mechanical way to reproduce a big sound. Because this is a bell that's inside the watch and is resonating from within the watch that sounds like a bell that's held in a hand and you know, hit with a hand.
That's really cool. And it's amazing that people can actually figure this stuff out.
Yeah, metallurgy is, it's a complex thing. And if Apple was really interested in doing its own metallurgy, one of the places they would go to would be the watch industry. And
okay, that makes sense.
To that end, Apple having offices in Switzerland, a research and development facility in Switzerland, makes a lot of sense to me. It'd be a great thing.
Well, if that's where the experts are, then that's where you set up shop.
Exactly.
Yeah, that totally makes sense.
Yeah, so all of this is interesting. And I want to emphasize the fact that this shows that things are coming from Apple.
Yes, that's a really good and very important point. And hopefully this means that at least for a brief moment in time, that Apple will roll out a product that shuts down the people saying Apple isn't innovating.
Yes.
And Apple has been innovating for a very, very long time, even when people don't realize it. That's true. But I think the big problem is that people are misinterpreting what innovation is. And
yes,
they're creating an expectation that no company can live up to.
I agree with that. And, you know, it's by people who don't create anything.
Right.
Who have no idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, an interesting week.
Actually,
we went long. Gosh darn it. We are long. We should get out of here.
Yes. Unless there's another time issue, in which case we still have 20 minutes.
It's true.
But we'll assume we've gone long.
We'll let the Time Lords work that out.
Yeah, they're good at that. Okay, that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening. Feel free to follow me on Twitter and app.net. I am Jay Gamm at both places. And head over to the iTunes Store, please. Rate our show. We love it when you do that, and it makes Brian feel really good about himself.
Oh, it's true. I seek all of my validation from outside sources. Speaking of which, please follow me on Twitter at TM O'Brien so that I can, not hate myself. And our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. You can find me at geektales.com. You can find Jeff at freshbrewtales.com. And please, that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
I have hugs for you, Brian. You don't have to hate yourself.
Oh.